Echo Romeo Kilo Productions presents episode 5 of On the Rails with Irk.
To those passengers with the camera, if you are going to take photographs, can you please turn your flash off? It's most important on the underground. Can you turn your flash off when you use the camera? And next time, if you're going to take a photograph, can you ensure that I'm smiling, please?
G'day, I'm Irk, and welcome to episode 5 of On the Rails with Irk, a personal railway podcast that comes to you from the Channel Irk studio, a part of Channel Irk. You can find out more information at ontherailswithirk.com. This is a personal podcast, and the opinions on this episode may not be those of any agency or operator. And of course, I'm trying to keep it as generic as possible, so that way we can talk to lots of different people from around the world, because we've different operators, different countries, different regions. There's lots of different terminology. It hardly seems like a month ago since I produced episode 4, and I hope you enjoyed that on the rails in Sydney. The Sydney monorail is no longer in service, and demolition has started to get rid of the Sydney monorail. I know there was a lot of people who were going out to have one last ride, as I did in the last episode. So during the last month, what have I been doing? I have been at my place of employment driving trains, because after all, that is my job that pays the bills, not the podcasting. But I did go away to the Gold Coast in Queensland for a weekend, and I was able to observe the work on what they are calling the Gold Coast Rapid Transit Project. Basically, what they're doing is that they are building a tram line. It's going to start in what they're calling the Health and Knowledge Precinct of the Gold Coast, up towards Griffith University, and then it will swing down to the coastal strip of the Gold Coast, taking in places such as Southport, Surfers Paradise, and Broadbeach is where Stage 1 will finish. From end to end, from the Health and Knowledge Precinct at the Griffith University to the end of the line at Broadbeach, it will take 37 minutes. Or indeed, from the Health and Knowledge Precinct, Surfers Paradise, the centre of the Gold Coast, in terms of tourism and whatnot, it will take 25 minutes. While I was there, you can see the line in various forms and various stages of construction. There are rails in many places, and for instance, at the Surfers Paradise main station at Cavill Avenue, you can actually see where the platforms are going to be, but they haven't done, in many instances, things like overhead wiring and whatnot. The line is due to commence operation in mid-2014. The ticketing will be fully integrated with the Queensland Go Card, which provides, it's basically the smart card for Southeast Queensland ticketing on the trains, on the buses, on the ferries, and now the Gold Coast Rapid Transit. So this time next year, hopefully, we'll be able to tell you that another line is open. Basically, what they're doing on the Gold Coast Strip itself, between Southport and Broadbeach, is that in many areas it'll be running basically down the centre of the Gold Coast Highway. The Gold Coast Highway is well served by bus services. However, there's a lot of traffic congestion, as there's a lot of residents, there's a lot of tourists, there's a lot of people who get onto the Gold Coast to start their adult life, there's a lot of people who go to the Gold Coast to retire, and there's a lot of sporting and special events up there as well, including an upcoming Commonwealth Games. So it will be interesting to see how the Gold Coast Rapid Transit goes. It's not one of the places that really, I can't say that it lends itself, it does lend itself to it, but it's not a real place with a lot of history when it comes to light rail. Now, there might have been light rail or trams you know, in the past, but it's definitely going now. So at the moment, stage one is from the education precinct at the Griffith University through to Southport. There's another possible stage from Broadbeach to Burleigh Heads. That's in the high level of planning stages. There's no funding for that particular stage yet. Another potential stage is between Helensvale and the Griffith University. Now, that particular stage would be rather cool because that would link the northern end of the line at Griffith University down to the Gold Coast Railway line operated by Queensland Rail. So that will be cool. There is a proposed route, although according to the website, there is a link on the show notes. There is indeed, according to the website, no intention or requirement to construct the particular corridor between Griffith University and Helensvale before 2016. They're saying that the existing road network and public transport system, i.e. buses, caters to medium-term population growth in the area, and there's no funding for that particular stage yet. There's only preliminary planning for that particular stage. Things like monorail were considered, enhanced bus services, bus lanes, bus rapid transit, light rail rapid transit, and monorail. And they found that either a bus rapid transit system or a light rail solution would be the best for the task, and that light rail was seen to have a greater potential to encourage economic development and a good mix with pedestrians in town centres. The other solutions, according to the website I'm reading from, including bus lanes and elevated monorail, were too costly or did not satisfy the service requirements. So that is the Gold Coast Rapid Transit. It'll be interesting to see how that goes in the next year or so. And when I come back from this particular song, I'm going to tell you about why trains run late.
You live beyond.
you're listening to episode number 5 of On The Rails With Erk, ontherailswitherk.com, a part of Channel Erk, and that song was called London Underground by a independent UK group called Ace Mafia, and that song leads us very well into the main topic for this episode. The song basically was written about a guy. He's an office worker, and he goes to and from work each and every day on the London Underground, and he absolutely hates it when he's on board the tube. But when he's at work in his office job, he can't wait for the excitement of the London Underground. So that's what that particular song is about. And I'm sure that anybody who has been on a train at one stage or another in their life has wondered, why do the trains run late? And I'll try and explain it as simply as possible. And I'll try and explain it in a way that's not specific to one particular system or to one particular operator, because a lot of these things can occur. It doesn't matter if it's here in Australia or in Japan or the US, the UK, Europe, or even like the Mexico Metro, for instance. It doesn't matter. Some of these things, you know, some of them change according to the local circumstances, but many of these things can contribute to what is the elephant in the room. And one of the questions that I most commonly get asked, why are the trains late? Let's go back to the most simple example and then work our way up from there. Let's imagine for a moment that you are running your own railway line. It's a single track railway line from point A to point B. There's no stations in the middle, there's only one track, and there's only one train. And that train goes backwards and forwards from point A to point B, and from point B to point A, and vice versa, all day, all night. It runs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And let's say, for the sake of the argument, that the line between station A and station B is 10 kilometres. Okay, if you're American, if your name's Shauno, let's imagine for the sake of the maths, the line is 10 miles long. You have the one train going from point A to point B, single track, and that's all that train does. So train A leaves station A at 8 a.m. So that train goes from station A to station B. Now, it might arrive at station B at 8:15, and then it goes backwards and forwards, and because there's only the one train between the two stations, there's only basically a half hour service, 15 minutes here, 15 minutes back, as just an example. While that particular train is running from station A to station B, everything's fine. That train's on time. There's no trains in front of it that it has to follow. There's no siding that it has to go into to let another train pass. Everybody on board the train is healthy. The train is working mechanically fine. There's a train crew on it, a guard and a driver. There's passengers on it. And while it's going backwards and forwards, there's no problem, the train's on time. But we could chuck in a variable, and there's just so many variables that you can chuck in. The train breaks down. Okay, there's only one train. So that means you don't have a train service anymore. Your train service is basically suspended because you have one train that goes from point A to point B, point B to point A, and backwards and forwards. So the train breaks down in the middle of the section between point A and point B. The train crew is sick. There's a passenger sick on the line. There's a tree that has fallen down across the line. There's a crack in the rail, for instance. You know, there's a swarm of kangaroos going across the line, and so the trains have to be stopped because there's a swarm of kangaroos on the line or something like that. It's raining and the line gets flooded. You know, the train gets struck by lightning. There's so many possibilities that could happen. Some of them the operator can control, and then some of them they can't. So you've got all these variables. One of these variables could be enough to stop that particular train service from point A to point B. So what do they do about it? Well, of course, you could have more trains between point A and point B. But if there's only one track, well, there has to be somewhere in the middle to have that particular those particular trains pass. So now, instead of having a single track between point A and point B, we could have a single track with another station in the middle, and there could be, for instance, two platforms. So you can have one train on platform one and one train on platform two in your little intermediate station that we'll call station C. So now, on that particular line, you could have two trains. But what you have to do, you have to make sure that there's only one train in each section at a time. So you can have one train in the section between A and C. You can have one train in the section between B and C in your most simple, you know, assuming there's no signals and things like that. That's the most basic you can get it. But still, what can happen? Train breaks down. You still can't get the train service the whole way. If there's a train in the way, you just can't pick it up with your magic hand and put it off to the side of the track. You know, worst case scenario, a train derails, for instance. You know, we've been able to add an extra train to our imaginary train service, but you have two trains and you have one track, one passing loop and three stations. There's only so much that you can do. And so you might put in signals in between the imaginary stations. You might put an extra track and some crossovers, or some people might call them junctions or turnouts, at each end of the line. But as you add to the complexity of your little railway line between point A and point B, and you expand it, the more chance there are of things going wrong. And boy, have there been some things that have gone wrong that I've experienced in my career. There's lots of different things that can happen. Of course, you can have mechanical failures and mechanical issues. Just tonight, I'm basically recording this basically as soon as I got home from my shift at my place of employment. I had some, without going into too many details, I had mechanical issues with my particular train. And so that caused my train to be cancelled in the end, and the trains behind it were delayed. The more complexity you add to the system, the more tracks you have, the more lines you have, the more trains you have, the more people you have, the wider the area of your coverage, the more potential problems that can happen. And you have to factor in things like mechanical problems. Trains and machines, they break down, especially because they're run by computers more often than not these days. The particular issue that I had on my train may or may not have been a computer issue. I still don't know the final result of what happened when that train went back to the depot and the train techs looked at it. So you can have mechanical issues and things like that. Because you've got tracks, you've got track issues, the tracks can buckle, the tracks can break, they can fracture. There could be obstructions on the track, trees. A couple of weeks ago we had a landslide Here in my particular city, we had a landslide, and say there were two tracks that were blocked for a week. Fortunately, in that case, there were two other tracks that you can divert trains around. So while the four-track section was now a two-track section, and the amount of trains were basically the same, trains were still able to run, but there was a series of delays that were experienced as a result of that. Sometimes Mother Nature is greater than all the technology that you have, all the infrastructure that you have, all the protecting systems that you have. So Mother Nature can be a really harsh mistress at times. You've got extremes in weather conditions. For instance, here in Australia, we don't have a lot of issues with snow on the with snow on the tracks. For instance, we're in places such as Canada and the northern US. It is experienced where they do have snow and blizzards and everything like that. When I was in New York City earlier this year in 2013, there was Blizzard Nemo. And even though the weather was forecast and people were warned about it and preparations were made, the fact that in some areas there was 12 inches of snow, and in other places like in Connecticut and Long Island, for instance, there were 30 inches of snow, that meant that there were delays to the system while that snow was cleared, and so people were able to resume their journeys. You have things like flooding, which has happened, and things like rain. Things run slower in the rain. People don't like getting wet, that's a fact. People should not be rushing around in the wet like they do. And if you are running around on the wet platform and you slip over, or if you're on a wet floor of a train and you slip over, you could be contributing to a delay while an ambulance or another medical professional comes and sees you. It can be too hot. For instance, in extreme hot weather, tracks can buckle and bend. Overhead wiring for the electric trains, they can sag. Having electric trains is another issue altogether. Whereas everything runs fine while you've got the trains running normally with using electric overhead wires. But if something happens to the wires, something happens to the pantograph, which is the section between the train and the wires, or if you have trouble with the wires themselves or the electricity supply themselves. An electric train isn't much use if there's no electricity, or the wires are somehow broken, or the pantograph's tangled in the overhead or whatever. That's not to say that diesel trains are any better. Sometimes diesel trains break down as well. You know, a modern train is a very complicated piece of machinery, and when they're going fine, they're going awesomely, but when they're not going fine, oy vey. You know, it can take a lot of technical know-how to be able to diagnose what the problem is and then go and fix it. And then, of course, you've got the pressure of we want that train going. My example tonight, there were trains behind me in tunnels as I was working to fix the particular problem that I had, and we were able to fix it to a degree where we were able to get the passengers off the train, and we were able to run the train empty back to the depot so we can get it fixed. And then we were able to source another train so the entire service wasn't cancelled that train was supposed to be providing. As I said, there's mechanical issues. There's things like vandalism. In the modern train operating world, vandalism is a major problem. For instance, if someone smashes a window or other piece of equipment, or a seat or a ceiling or something like that, those carriages have to be isolated. And so, let's say you have an 8-carriage train and you have one carriage which is locked off because someone has smashed a window. Well, that means you're trying to get 8 carriages worth of people into 7. And so that makes things a lot difficult. Just the other night, I had a train that I had to take back to a depot because it had finished its passenger service for the night. And there was 8 carriages. Out of 8 carriages, 3 of them were locked up because there was a lot of vomit in those particular trains. It was unsanitary to have those carriages open, and it can be very difficult late at night to find people to clean them. You know, there's nothing worse than walking through a train carriage that somebody has vomited in it. So in that case, close the carriages off, make sure that no one gets in them, and run with the carriages that we have. I'm certainly glad I wasn't cleaning that train that particular night. We can have medical emergencies. I've had instances where people have had trips and falls on the train. They've had maybe a pre-existing health condition, a health condition they didn't even know about. There was one instance early on in my career where a guy actually had a heart attack on the train. We were made aware of it. We had to wait for the paramedics to arrive. It was unsafe to move the person. So that particular train was stopped at my station, and then because it was peak hour on a Monday morning, there were lots of trains behind it, which delayed a lot of people. But unfortunately, the paramedics were unable to revive the man, and he died on the train. And they, either on the train or on the platform, but he died as a result of being on the train because he had a heart attack. Yet there are people who don't care what the reason is why that particular train is late. They don't care that someone has just died, or they've been seriously injured going on their way to work or on their way to wherever they're going. They just think that they're inconvenienced, and yes, they are inconvenienced, but you know, they'll blame the operator, they'll blame the people on the train, they'll have a suki gaga, as I like to say, about the situation. But ultimately, if someone has a heart attack or a seizure on the train, people having seizures on the train can happen. People fall down on the train and they can't be moved because you might think they have a spinal injury or something like that. You can't necessarily just scoop them and run, so you can let the train proceed. In some areas, if you know about a situation early enough, you can divert the train around the problem train. For instance, with my train tonight, there were some trains that were stuck immediately behind it, and there's no way that those trains could have got out of the way until I got out of the way. Whereas trains further back, they did have the opportunity, if they needed to divert them somewhere else so that the service could continue in some way, shape or form. So vandalism, people getting ill or sick or injured on the trains is a big problem. And unfortunately also is a big problem, another elephant in the room that some people don't like talking about, but I often get asked about, is the case of people committing suicide in front of trains. People jumping in front of the train for whatever reason. And when that happens, the train could be there for, you know, an hour or more while the investigations are done and the cleanup's undertaken. Now, I realise that this isn't necessarily pretty or anything like that, but unfortunately, this is the harsh reality of things. When I went into train driver school, I was warned that in my career, I could expect to kill, fatally injure, at least one person in my driving career. At this stage, I've been a driver for 8 years, 8.5 years, and I have not hit anybody yet. There's been quite a few occasions where I've come close, and I know many of my colleagues have had fatalities, and they have different terminology for this around the world. But I know in England, for instance, in the London Underground that we had the song about earlier, they call them one unders. And yes, during driver school, I was warned I could expect at least one fatality or one under in my career. Which, when you think about it, isn't necessarily a lot. But then again, you average how many drivers are out there. For instance, you know, we could have, I don't know, 2,000 drivers at a time. And then you think about how many drivers pass through an organisation during their career. And that is a lot of people. I don't have any figures in front of me. But yes, we were told to expect, you know, one person per career. And it just depends on circumstances and how lucky you were. One colleague that I knew of, he was about to retire. He was in his final week of being a train driver, and he'd been a driver for 40 years. And, you know, that to me is very hard to imagine. But throughout his career, driving all the different sorts of trains that he'd driven, he had not had one single one under until the very final week of his retirement, of his career, his final week of his career. I think it was something like on the Tuesday, and he was going to retire on the Friday. And it was just dumb luck, I guess, that he potentially could have finished his career like that. He didn't. He came back and he drove, and he saw out his career. There are some people that go through their entire career and they don't have one, and there are others who have multiples. In India, for instance, I was watching a documentary about the Indian railway system, and you've probably all seen photographs of people hanging out of the sides of the trains or even riding on the roofs of the trains in certain places in India. Now, you'll remember that I just told you that I could expect one under during my career as a train driver here in Australia. In India, of course, you have to take into account the bigger population, also the standards of the railways and the fencing and whatnot. But they were told that they could expect 70 one-unders in their career for an average driver. Now, that is just mind-boggling. Now, I can't remember the exact year, but it's only in recent memory that India had a paramedic service or an ambulance service. Often what used to happen, and I think it still happens to a degree now in India, is that if someone has a one-under, they'll just keep going and just report it when they get to the next station. The railways in India, by the way, according to this documentary, is the biggest employer of people in the Indian country. And just another snippet about India while we're here, somewhat related. A couple of days ago, the very final telegram in India was sent. So they'll be no longer sending telegrams. Once upon a time, on the railways, telegrams and coded messages were very important because we didn't have things like mobile phones and computers and that sort of thing. Even to a degree today, we still operate on codes and jargon and acronyms and bell signals and who knows what else. So it's very interesting now that they have finally stopped using telegrams in India in the year 2013. So it's just amazing. Now, you might be wondering, how do we cope with the premise that you could possibly go to work and by the end of the shift, totally out of your control, hit and kill someone with a train? Well, it's a thing that we're basically told to deal with. The majority of railway organisations that I know, they do have councillors and whatnot that the train crew can take advantage of. Here where I am, there's no mandatory time off anymore for someone who suffers someone having a 1-under in front of them. You could go back to work the next day. You could be totally fine and go back to work the next day. When it happens, you do get relieved by another driver. And that does happen. But if you think that you're okay to go back the next day, well, you can go back the next day. It's not a mandatory thing where you can have, you know, 2 or 3 days off or a week off or whatever. It depends on how long it takes you to recover from that particular incident. I had an incident that was called a near hit, where someone crossed the tracks in front of me at high speed, and I took a week off work because I wasn't fit to do what I was supposed to do. There's no mandated time off, and as I said, if it takes you 3 weeks to recover, well, it takes you 3 weeks to recover. That's just the way it is. Some people have different mechanisms and different ways of coping, and I know when I became a driver, I was basically warned and given some strategies in place on how to deal with that. But that is a very common question that I get asked, and some people, they sort of try and skirt around the issue when they first find out I'm a train driver, but usually that comes up as an issue. So we've got a range of issues why trains can run late. We can have, as I've already mentioned, we can have people being injured by trains or killed by trains, or mechanical issues, the weather, the track, signalling infrastructure breaks down. Also, you've got congestion. There's a lot of people getting on peak hour trains, and so what the operators have to do is try and figure out the best way to get people on and off trains. And sometimes at larger stations, there's not a lot of room to go, especially if you're at a station where there's a lot of people getting off the train, but there's also a lot of people trying to get on the train. I have noticed that there's a lot of people who, when a train pulls in, they'll immediately stand right outside the doors. And that, my friends, is not good. You need to clear those doorways, let the people let the people off the train first, and then you can get on. And when you do get on, just don't go just inside the door and then stop, because you've got a lot of people getting on behind you, so move in as far as you can go. The quicker you can get on and off a train, the better it is. If people take a long time to get on and off a train, that can lead to trains running late, and that can lead to congestion. There's a lot of people who once upon a time would never be able to take a train, but they do now. There's people with various disabilities who use wheelchairs and walking frames and crutches and even mobility scooters. Those people need extra time to get on and off trains, and I admire anyone who in those situations does catch a train, because it can be difficult. It can be difficult for people with disabilities to get on and off trains. There's a lot of people who take their children on trains with their big prams. I know especially the rather large prams that some people have dubbed the A380 pram, because they are just so large. You add, you know, people in wheelchairs, people on crutches, walking frames, mobility scooters, prams, luggage, all of those sort of things can slow people down and slow the trains down. Sometimes there's not necessarily a lot you can do about it. You know, if a person, for instance, using a wheelchair or has luggage, or someone using an A380 pram, sometimes there's not a lot you can do to hurry those sort of people up. But there can be things in place to help them, and things are getting a lot easier to move around with things like lifts and elevators and escalators and things like that. There are some people who I admire who are able to get around on the train system. They might be legally blind, but they can still get around. Some of them use a walking cane, some of them have a friend to help them, some of them use a guide dog. And seeing those particular people getting around on the system is awesome. They do a lot of training so they know where they are and where the exits are and all of that sort of stuff. But yeah, good on them for, you know, getting out and catching the train and that sort of thing. Another thing with congestion is that sometimes you have what we call converging routes or junctions. And so a decision has to be made by the people who are running the trains. What train goes first? As a classic example, you might have, think of a T-junction on a road, and you have all these particular ways that you can go. You can go straight ahead, or you can turn left, or you can turn right, or sometimes you might even take a U-turn. But with a train, there can only be one train in a particular section, doesn't matter how big that section is, at one time. So if there's one train that's due in to a station at 8 o'clock, and there's one train that's due into the station at 8:03, and they're using different routes, but they're coming onto the same platform, well, as you might think, the train that's due at 8 o'clock goes first and uses that platform, and so the train at 8:03 then follows it. But sometimes what happens is that 8 o'clock train is delayed, and so they might have the train that uses the platform at 8:03 go first, and then the train at 8 o'clock follows it. Sometimes that can lead to congestion as well, because once a train becomes late, sometimes it can be difficult, and what happens is we call it losing its path. And so try and keep the trains that are on time, try and keep them on time, whereas there might be one particular train that's not on time, so we'll try and keep the trains that are on time, so to speak. And sometimes how that is done, sometimes the trains are diverted from one track to another. Sometimes they actually, on purpose, miss stations. And so they'll try and, you know, use an express track and try and overtake. So the 8:03 train will go first, the 8 o'clock train will follow it, and then a little bit further down the track, they'll switch the 8 o'clock and then they'll run it down the express track and then switch it back over. So when it comes to the main station in the city, the 8 o'clock train is again ahead of the 8:03 train. And sometimes things are just that out of order that, you know, sometimes it's not possible. Sometimes stops are skipped on purpose to help try and make up time. There might be a situation like, for instance, the landslide at the station might cause a problem. Whereas when the problem was first discovered, the authorities, the powers that be, didn't let any trains stop at that station. Just in case other things happened, they wanted to keep the station clear of passengers. They didn't want sightseers coming out and having a look and that sort of thing. And so for safety's sake, they said, okay, no trains will stop at this station. And then, of course, when things are going wrong, you've got things like alternative transport. But then again, that's probably another episode in itself. So let me have a look and see if there's anything that I've really, really forgotten things that I've really, really forgotten about when it comes down to issues and whatnot. So you can have things such as signals, tracks, overhead wiring and points problems, vandalism and antisocial behavior. Yeah, that can be a big one. Overcrowding, yes, definitely can lead to problems. Illnesses and fatalities, yes, absolutely, they can lead to problems. People slow to get on and off trains, definitely problems. And then things like weather conditions, Mother Nature, yeah, definitely can be a problem. Anywho, I hope you've enjoyed the episode. There are, as I said, there's a lot of things that can cause a train to run late. Lots of things that can cause a train to run late. There's lots of different strategies to get around it and to avoid it. As I said, alternative transport is probably another area of discussion, and how you inform people of these delays and what you do to try and get back on track, pun not intended, but that's probably another episode. So I hope you have enjoyed this episode. Thank you to those people who are listening. Thank you especially to Shauno for your feedback, and hello to everyone who is listening. Anywho, I'm Merck. Thank you very much for listening. Next time on the episode, I might even tell you what it's like the day in the life of a train driver. If you can think of anything else that delays trains that I haven't mentioned, let me know. You can leave a comment on the show notes, episode 5, at ontherailswitherk.com, or indeed leave a comment on the show notes there, episode 5, or you can send me an email, erkpod@gmail.com. Anywho, until next time, I'm Erk. Thanks for listening. This episode terminates here. Good night, Interweb.
Due to defective brakes, the next train does not stop at this platform. Intending passengers should board this train by running down the platform. Doors may not be opened.